Are you seeking more creativity in your life? Join us, Nadia and me, Laura, the hosts of the Creative Rumble podcast.
Each week, we delve into the minds of inspirational creatives, share their wisdom and our own creative journeys. We explore how to align yourself, develop creative ideas, and find inspiration.
Join us as we explore what it takes to live a creative life so you too can feel the creative rumble.
Living a creative life is for everyone. Let's Creative Rumble.
The Creative Rumble podcast acknowledges the traditional custodians of this country and recognise Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples' continuing connection to land, sea, waterways, sky and culture. We pay respects to elders, past, present and emerging. Hello, Creative Rumblers. Nadia Aliff Robinson and I, Laura Purcell, are thrilled you can join us again. We've had some pretty epic episodes lately with such interesting and creatively full guests. From backing yourself to trying new activities to knowing when to change direction, it is never the same for everyone, and I would say that's the beauty of creativity. It is uniquely your own discoveries and pathways. I want to ask you a question. What advice would you give to someone who is putting off their creative practice for later? Is it something you relate to? Ponder that for a moment as we begin today's episode in a space alive with creativity and brimming with history, the working studio of Nicole Ottray. A costume designer, textile artist and educator with over four decades of experience, Nicole's world is one of fabric, form and fierce dedication to the craft of making. As we step into her home studio in Nipaluna, Hobart, we're surrounded by pins, patterns, almost finished pieces and vibrant materials, all part of the costume-making flurry for Rosny College's 2025 production of Newsies and Bijou Tasmania's Emma. The room is humming with the energy of a well-seasoned maker. Nicole's career spans fashion houses, international studios, TAFEs and classrooms. But for the past two decades, her creative home has been at Rosny College. There, she's nurtured hundreds of young artists and performers while quietly building and managing one of Tasmania's most impressive school costume collections. Her work has graced major productions for various genres of theatre, including musical, drama, dance and performance. From Phantom of the Opera and career highlight of Priscilla to Jane Eyre and Top Girls, as well as deeply personal commissions like story quilts and bespoke garments that honour memory, heritage and connection. Known for her generosity, precision and deep respect for craft, Nicole moves fluidly between teacher, designer, technician and collaborator. She's the kind of creative who not only makes the work, but makes the work possible for others. I admire Nicole's energy, passion and generous energy. She is always exploring and learning more about shoemaking, sketchbook journaling, fashion, illustration, millinery and embroidery through specialist courses and regularly travels to cities like Amsterdam, Tokyo, Paris and Melbourne to investigate textiles, costume and performance. She regularly exhibits with Stitching and Beyond and with works in the Rosny Schoolhouse Biennial at Moona Arts Centre for a quilt exhibition curated by Glenn Murray and the Weaver's Cottage Studio in Oatlands. As Nicole prepares for a big life change, retiring from formal teaching and also thinking about relocating to be closer to family after decades in Tasmania, we caught her in the thick of creation, surrounded by decades of collected materials and memories. In this episode, we talk about the joys and challenges of a life devoted to making, the evolution of costume in education and performance, and what it means to carry stories in stitches. Welcome to the Creative Rumble, Nicole Ottray. We have a lot to cover today.
Yes, you make it sound so much, and you make me feel like, oh, who's that person? I think everyone says that after your lovely introductions, but yeah, thank you.
Well, it's all you. It's all yours.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Oh, you're most welcome.
Thank you so much, Nicole, for having us in your home and studio. I've described briefly where we are presently, but perhaps our listeners might like to hear more about us expanding on more details, because for anyone who loves costume, fabric and textiles, this is the most heavenly place. So can we just describe what we've just experienced with you and what you have in your home?
So there's a different room of each creative output. And they're colour themed as well.
Yes.
Yes, perhaps not intentionally.
So basically this is the dream house when your children have left home and you have all of this extra space. What do you do with it? Suddenly it becomes multiple rooms for studio space. And that is what Nicole has done. And there are wall to wall, floor to ceiling, books, buttons, costumes, racks of costumes, hats, beautiful Fluvox shoes, samples and pictures. And then throughout the home, there are all these beautiful framed prints, mostly by her husband, John. Shout out, John. Thank you for having us. And so this place is an array of image. There's a really strong sense of style and fashion and texture and colour curation as well.
Yeah, definitely curation.
It's very curated.
Each room and
bookshelf.
Rack. Yeah, rack is all designed, within an inch of its life. It's beautiful.
And then there's and there's mood boards everywhere as well. So all of the inspirations you've got, lots of images put together, just thinking about the next project or just things that inspire you. So it is a very inspirational space.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
I can't imagine not living without all that inspiration. You go into people's homes where they don't have much or in studios where there are no pictures or no books, and I think, what inspires them?
Yeah, how are you doing this?
Yeah. So I love to be surrounded by things and I love collecting things and I don't like putting them away in the cupboard because I forget they're there. You didn't even look in the cupboards in my art room and the curation of the things in there. Like there are tubs and those are organised by colour, and then there are things in the tubs organised by colour in clip-lock bags.
Oh,
and
I love
just
it.
Just waiting to become projects. So the time has come to get them out.
Well, I love how you're so proud of the fact that behind those cupboard doors there's more and more and more and more. Some people would be like, oh, you don't want to see that. But honestly, you know, you did open a couple of boxes for us to see and open some drawers, and they are this
full of treasures.
It's treasure. This place is a treasure chest.
Magpies.
Yeah, bowerbird.
Magpies. Anything shiny, you know.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be really expensive. I collect on the cheap a bit. So if it's shiny and looks good and speaks to me, it'll come home. Yeah, the opposite of Marie Kondo, you know, the Marie.
Shrinking things down, throwing things out, the minimalist look.
Yeah, no, if it makes me happy, I'll bring it home.
Oh,
yeah, I love
not
it.
Throw it out.
Yeah.
That's great. I wanted to start with the question that we did ask our audience earlier, and that was, what advice would you give to someone who is putting off their creative practice for later? And that question came from you as advice. So I was wondering if we could start there and then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, if you want to do something, just do it. Get on with it. I tend to put mood boards together and collect all these things, and then sometimes I just don't even get round to making the thing. I just collect everything. And now I've got all those collections I want to really make, and I think don't put it off. Just do it. You don't have to be highly skilled. You just have to be passionate about what you do and give it a go. And then if you find you don't have the skills that you want to do that really well, go and get them. Go and learn something new. And I think never stop learning. And I think in education, that's one of the biggest things I really like about being in teaching. Your students can give you so much too. You give them skills, but they give you ideas and keep you fresh and keep you thinking and on your toes. So it's a real two-way process. And I think you're never too old to learn. Never too old to learn. Never too young to start. Yeah,
absolutely.
I've got a friend who teaches her grandchildren to sew at 3 years old. I know Roz's children were sewing at a really young age. And on this current show, Newsies, I've got things done by a 9-year-old her grandmother wasn't able to do the sewing she usually does for me because she's had a knee operation and couldn't get on a sewing machine. So she put a 9-year-old on the sewing machine to do sewing. Yeah. And yeah, I learned to sew when I was 5. And I think there's just not enough of that anymore because I have so many students who come into my class at year 11. And they've never sewn. They've never touched fabric. They don't know how to watch them thread a needle and they've still got the thread on the cotton reel and they're putting a needle on and they've got no idea how to hold it. And I just think that's really sad because making makes my heart sing. Mm. So I like to share that with everyone. And, yeah.
Bless. That's so nice. Yeah. Yes. And actually to be able to use your hands in such a detailed way is so important, like that dexterity and cognitive function and coordination and learning at 5. Like who taught you?
My mum.
Your mum?
Yeah. I used to rush home from school and get on the sewing machine, the old Singer that I still have in the cupboard, tucked away in yet another cupboard of things.
Wow.
And, yeah, I used to come home from school and she'd torn sheets up and I learned to sew straight lines on the Singer sewing machine at 5, after school.
That's amazing.
Yeah. It's that enthusiasm, isn't it? And it's exciting.
It's funny because I started making Barbie doll dresses and I do these really weird satin sleeves. You know how you cut the cardboard toilet rolls at the end and splay them out to put on a picture, like a collage? Yeah. Well, I did that with these tubes of fabric and set the sleeves in that way for my Barbie doll. It was like, ooh. And so it's been really interesting in recent years. I've actually bought some really beautiful Barbie doll books since the movie and would like to go back to doing a bit of that.
Oh, that's I used to love doing that as a child as well, trying to make outfits for my dolls.
But that's where it all started and I had a bigger doll and she's got an amazing wardrobe that I've still got in the top of the cupboard.
Of course she does.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So what is that? I mean, there's also the innovation behind that. So you're finding new materials to make something happen that – can't possibly buy or it's not available.
Yeah, yeah. And at the time when I started making dolls, because I didn't know any sewing techniques, I didn't know how to do things, so I just experimented and just kept playing. Mm. Yeah.
And from a sustainability perspective, like being like quite resourceful, I know my grandparents had a story about it must have been when my mother was young, but all the parents on the street used to get together and work out how, because people didn't have a lot of money, how they were going to put on Christmas. And one year they made cowboy outfits for everyone using Hessian sacks and things. Everybody got together and sort of crafted out these costumes for everybody to have. And I was just like, people don't do that really anymore.
No.
Yeah.
Actually, I did see on the socials, but that, you know, flour sacks, you know, the companies during
I have a book about that.
Oh, do you?
Really? Yeah. And coffee
beans. Yeah. So the companies started printing beautiful prints.
Knowing that people would repurpose them.
During the Depression in America, that was really big.
Yeah.
Yeah, and in Australia, and they'd use them in quilts. There was a lovely 200 years of quilting exhibition at the Ian Potter some years ago, and it had a whole section on those.
And all of that has transformed into what you're doing today. And today you're in the middle of massive show.
Yes.
You're about to go live in a couple of weeks.
Oh, not a couple of weeks. Next Monday will be the first. Yeah, Monday week. Mm. Will be the first student school matinee. So we've got a week.
Amazing.
So how many costumes?
37 in the cast.
Yeah.
I quite like this show because a large number of the cast are only newsies. In the previous couple of years, and especially Priscilla, some cast members had up to 10 costume changes. So I really like a good show with just the same costume the whole show.
Absolutely.
Actually, let's go back to Priscilla because that was a real highlight for you. And I got to see the show. It was incredible. The costumes were absolutely amazing.
Thank you.
And you worked so hard. It was just all your creative juices were flowing from all angles. It was so well done.
Thank you. Yeah, it was a pretty massive project and it also marked 50 years of Rosny College. So I was trying to incorporate costumes from as many different shows as possible.
Oh, what a lovely idea.
Yeah. So each year, where there was something that had a bit of glitter on it or something special, it came out of the closet and went into the show. And it was a really good show because some of the groups were quite small. So I only had to have five really lovely red dresses for one particular scene and four cupcakes in another scene. So it was good to be able to bring together small little groups of costumes. It was just the Gumbies, where the entire cast were the Gumbies that have the big shoes.
Yeah.
But we're really lucky in Tasmania. The guy who had a production company up in Sydney for many, many years and did all the costumes for all the musicals retired to Launceston and is a good friend of a friend of mine. So I ended up texting him saying, how did you do those Gumby feet? What were they like? And he said, don't go near them, do something else. So what I did for my Gumbies was found in the cupboard at Rosny a big tub of Lycra pants in various colours that the school had used when it used to go into the School of Stedfords. And I'm pretty sure that was back in 1999, the last Stedford the college went in, and the things were still on top of the cupboard where I store stuff at school. And so I brought those home and I slashed into the legs of them and then inserted these bright godays of colour and made these amazing Gumby pants. And around the bottom, my couple of friends and I went walking around the street at the time of the hard rubbish collection and collected the black garden sprinkler system pipe put those together in the hems of the Gumby pants to make them like two hoop petticoats.
Yeah, yeah.
And the movement in those pants was amazing. So that was a big, big number of pants and things to make, but I had a bit of help on it, but had all these little different scraps of fabric because recycling in theatre, sustainability in theatre is so important because you don't get big budgets usually.
Yes.
You have to put on a big showy show. So yeah. I just used everything from everywhere and every scrap that anyone had ever given me.
Yeah.
Made a showing and then I bought a few things. But it was a pretty special show. The year before I'd been given a whole lot of headpieces from Rest Point Casino because my friend Roz was.
I've heard about these
headpieces. They're legendary.
So, there was a big sale of headpieces some years before in Hobart, and a number of people, including Laura, has a number of those. And Rest Point Casino had some of their own, but some of them were a bit beyond what they wanted to deal with in terms of storage because they were falling apart. So Roz engineered it to give them to me. And they went into the show. So we just remade them at school. I had people like Roz come in and help. And I also had Yolanda Pert Smith come in and wash feather headpieces for me and restyle them. And and Yolanda is an ex-student from Rosny too. So I had all these people come in. And I had an amazing student, Indy Corbin, who I can just take any material from flat and create a 3D form. I've not seen skill like that in a student before, and it was just amazing having her work on the show. A number of the headpieces upstairs she created from scratch, and I remember going to see the Alexander McQueen exhibition, and there was this log with these butterflies, and the butterflies actually moved, and I took this video of it and sent it to her, and she just recreated one like that for Bernadette to wear in Priscilla, her leopard pant, Gumby pants, and it was just amazing. And having a student who could do that was fabulous. And then I had William Dowd come in and he worked on a flock of emus for me and other headpieces for the finale where everyone had an animal head with an amazing dress. And the dresses were all these feathered dresses that had been used in Sweet Charity that the college put on as their musical in 2008, I think it was. So every show that the school had done, we found something. I'm not sure what I used from the year we did Les Mis, but I probably found something.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was very special because I think that reusing of things and honouring things from, from previous shows was just such a good story. I think going back to that point you made about the meditative nature of sewing, I made a few discoveries, or not discoveries, but during COVID, that it was a really important, really nice to have a skill to fall back on and just sit at home and sew, and use up everything I had in the cupboard without going out and buying anything. So I made some beautiful cushions that are scattered around downstairs and upstairs in my studio, and also made that button picture for an exhibition at the Schoolhouse Gallery.
Mm.
Yeah, so the meditative nature and the mental health benefits of having a hobby, I think, are really important.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think lots of people during COVID realised I want to do something crafty, but then might have been able to get, you know, some sewing needles. But, yeah, we're a bit lost. I mean, you can watch videos and things, but I think just also being taught by someone else, in person is.
Yeah, taught and being surrounded by the people who really
I think you touched on it before, but the teaching component about working with students and curiosity and fabric and textiles, obviously some people must come to the class, some students must come to the class and they must be really fascinated and want to do it and want to become a fashion designer and things like that.
Yeah.
And then other people are more reluctant.
Yeah. You have a great range of students. It's really lovely when you have those that are really as passionate as you are about it. And I occasionally get those and they're just bright sparks in the class. Yeah. And then you get others who have really tough family lives and just come to have a break from whatever else is happening, and it's really the meditative benefits of having a hobby and something to do with their hands.
Yes.
And it's great to see them blossom. And and then you have those that just don't want to be there. And some of them just discover themselves and realise, hey, I did really want to do, I do really like this. I had one student a few years ago and he did textiles 1 year, and then the following year he did the subject that our students can do if they want to get some pre-tertiary points. They can do a university subject called object design.
Yeah.
Anyway, this boy did object design and made this amazing coat, and it was during the year of COVID, and he wasn't going to make the coat because he didn't know how to sew, and he really felt he needed my face-to-face attention at school to sew. And then we had the students come back to school, so we decided he'd make this coat. And it was amazing. And he wrote this lovely evaluation at the end of the year that he really discovered passion he had. He'd uncovered something he really wanted to do. And it was funny because a couple of times I'd take photos of him at the sewing machine and I'd send them to his mum. And she texted back and thanked me so much for sending these photos, because usually all she got was the text messages saying he hadn't shown up at school.
Yeah.
And now she was getting photographs of him actually working.
Yeah.
And he went on to do the textiles course at the TAFE college here.
Amazing.
And so I'm not sure what he's doing now, but I saw a picture of him on social media where he's actually cut his hair and gone to the mainland. So I think he might be working in
fashion or something. That's so lovely.
Yeah, so whereas he'd been really lost and didn't know what he wanted to do, doing this subject, he found his passion.
Oh, that's amazing. So you would be the carrier of so many of those beautiful stories.
And sometimes you don't find out till afterwards. Because sometimes I teach adults or have adults work with me in some way. They want to learn a little bit more about you know, what it's like to work in the theatre and come and help out. And I had one guy, this big burly guy from the chemist in Bayfield Street came to help, and I showed him a few ways to do millinery, and I was doing some hats for a show Annette Downs put on with Claire Dawson.
Yes.
And, had to make all these hats of various sizes, getting bigger and bigger and showier as she went to more auditions to get a place on a show. And, I showed him what I was doing and took him to see the show, and then we went to an exhibition where I had to sit at a table and actually be the artist in residence making hats. And he sat there and helped me, and he now has his own millinery business.
Oh, how amazing.
Yeah, years later. And I didn't realise at the time. And so I asked him outright, because sometimes you don't realise the impact you have on people.
Yes, of
and
course.
I said, oh, did you know how to do millinery before I showed you? And he said, no, you showed me everything I know.
Oh, that is so amazing.
Yeah, so his hats now are pretty amazing. He's gone to live in, is it Boona in Queensland, with his boyfriend and makes
fabulous.
Hats. Yeah.
Oh, that's so nice. That's so nice. Because it is, and that, I mean, that was one of the points in that you do, you make the work possible for others. You know what I mean? Yeah, by your skills and your learnings, you make it happen, or you encourage or you inspire. It's really
And at work, when I work on costume, I go in and I set up workstations, and I have these little packages already with the my little job sheets, and they can just go and pick a task, and it's got the instructions and it's got the materials, and they just make whatever it is we need for the show, and that seems to have worked really well over the last 2 years. I've really enjoyed because it's, and I don't give them everything to start right from the beginning. If I know their skill level doesn't include making the dress, I'll just give them the dress and they can glue the beads all over it and, you know, colour it, spray paint it, whatever. And so, yeah, finding the skill level and the interest of the student and honing in on that so that it's an achievable task is a really
and also that it's a bit self-directed too, so they can have that agency over the task, so they're more likely to
So they don't get lost in it because it's too big for them, but they can jump in at a point they can cope with and then just do what they want.
Oh, that's really
great.
Amazing.
That's you sort of like facilitating the creativity.
Yeah.
But also like you're not micromanaging, you know, or you're not standing in the corner going, oh, don't make it that colour.
There have been moments when I have done that in the past, but sometimes done is good.
Yeah, yeah.
Done is good. And getting that balance between you want this vision and you want it all perfect. Perfectionism is overrated.
Yeah.
Sometimes student-led things just bring out the most interesting results, and you've just got to be brave and let it happen.
Yeah. Was there a moment that did that for you? Like that you when you realised that this actually works, or that process?
Yeah, I think series of moments is more like it.
Yeah.
Over the years, I had a student when I first started teaching, Lucy Wilkins, who was really talented, and she'd come up with these storyboards and say, oh, we want to do this, Nicole, we want to do that, and she'd draw these pictures, and we did the show called Into the Woods.
Mm.
And so my time, I'd go home after work and I'd just make up this picture she did, and I'd take it back and she was just gobsmacked that, you know, that's my design, Nicole. So, yeah, different students have different skills to bring. So it's really very individual response to each situation. In answer to your question, yeah, it's different. It's been different each year. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it has evolved how I've worked with students, especially over the last few years. I've had the job card system so they can all go individually, because it's often very hard to stimulate and get a whole class of 10, 15, 20, 25 people doing stuff. So having the job cards has been really good in that situation. But then also meeting the individual needs of, some really bright sparks and enabling them to work to capacity. And sometimes that's bringing in a mentor. Different responses to...
Because that's the challenge with teaching too. Everyone's at a different level.
Yep.
You sort of have to take everyone along on the journey.
And I've done things over the years sometimes, and I jokingly say to people, well, I'm going to do this, I'm going to have this speaker in, or I'm going to run this like this. And if at least one student's interested or two students are interested, you know, I've got half.
Yeah.
I've achieved something, because you can't expect to bring everyone along.
Yeah.
And so sometimes it's very much an individual one-to-one thing, if that makes sense.
Okay.
Yeah.
Changing people's lives.
Well, who changed your life? Because let's talk about you've brought in mentors for students.
So I had an aunt, along with my mum, I had an aunt, and they taught me to sew, and I think that just opened up a whole world for me of sewing. And then I had a sewing teacher that I went to Mrs. Axton's sewing school.
Oh, cute.
She was pretty amazing. And the other students there, we just sewed on Friday afternoons, and that was really fun. I think that was really good.
How old would you have been then?
Oh, then 12, 13, 14.
So there was a sewing school then.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So cool.
Yeah. And then year 12 art, I had a fabulous art teacher who liked to sew. The sewing teacher I didn't get on so well with. But in year 12 art, I hand-painted fabric and made this beautiful dress and then made this beautiful shawl and inspired by the art of Aubrey Beardsley and various people at a Catholic school. I think if the nuns had known what I was up to and what she was up to, we mightn't have got so far. But, that was in the late 70s. What was her name? Denise Bryant, yeah. And that was pretty amazing. And I ended up, I don't know quite how, but I ended up getting top of the state in art because my fabric, my batik fabric, the dresses were really lovely and the artwork was interesting. She tended to take the pen and take over a bit, but and I resist that now because of that. But she was pretty inspirational. And then I met this amazing lady when I was at fashion school and she took me under her wing a bit. She was 18 years older than me, but she'd gone back to fashion school and we were a bit of a team and, made lots of stuff and did lots of things together and I still keep in touch with her now that she's in her 80s now still making stuff.
What's her name?
Gina Hughes. So she's in Melbourne.
You went to fashion school in Melbourne?
I did. Yeah. I did RMIT.
Oh, yeah, great.
RMIT.
Yeah, we spoke to Victoria Bliss a couple of episodes
ago. Yes, I heard that one. And she talked about, I taught at fashion at Kangan TAFE. And then I moved from Kangan TAFE to Melbourne College of Textiles. And Melbourne College of Textiles, after I'd left and come here, was taken over by RMIT and became part of them.
I love that.
And, RMIT fashion is now on the campus in Brunswick and among the interesting little fabric shops along Sydney Road, Brunswick, in the same place where I was teaching for Melbourne College of Textiles. So, it's close because my colleagues went on to work there.
Yeah.
And I knew some of the teachers there for a while.
And that's where you learnt to work with leather, like your beautiful wedding dress that you showed us?
No, my leather experience came after I'd finished college. Mm-hmm. After I'd finished RMIT, I had a couple of different jobs and I got some work at a little place called Wasted Talent, and they used to make belts out of leather. So they're wasted with an I, although sometimes they were a bit wasted. Champagne on Fridays after work.
It was
a really lovely environment in Fitzroy in Melbourne in a converted warehouse. Oh. And, I learned to sew leather with them.
Yeah, what a cool job.
And, made my wedding dress in those, I think, 87. It was a few years later. Yeah, made my wedding dress. And
that Nicole showed us. I've got some footage of it, but it's like this beautiful bodice, beaded, but the bodice is leather, like a white, creamy, soft.
Like a little skin.
Kid skin. It's
beautiful.
It's very 80s. Yeah. It's beautiful.
very 80s.
Right.
With this ballerina skirt. And this woman I met when I was teaching at Kangan, because I think it was at Kangan TAFE by then teaching, and she had been a dressmaker and she helped me do the skirt, this ballerina skirt. And it's funny because she gave me some really lovely heavy threads on big spools that I still use today. I haven't got through the 10,000 meters yet, so I quite often think of her.
Isn't that lovely?
June Snell was her name. And, so there's been a lot of people that I've, done projects with. William Dowd, I love doing theatre work with him. Roz Wren, I love working on shows with Roz.
Yeah.
Rachel Lang, I did a few shows for. Yeah. And Annette Downs has always said, "Oh, Nicole, come and work on this show for me." And I did a lovely dress in black for a show called Geologies with Wendy Morrow.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
That was divine.
Yeah.
Yes. So,
I've even done a dress for Rick. Rick Goddard, who you interviewed last week. It was a lovely 1870s bustle with a little hat. I think Anna Kidd wore it a bit in.
Yeah.
She did Horrible Histories walks around Hobart.
Oh, yes.
She wore it for a while.
Oh, that's great.
But, yeah, working with people on shows has been really lovely, having that collaboration with people.
Yeah. Actually, that was one of my questions. What were your favourite collaborations or standout moments? Oh, what about the collaboration you did with Deb Wace?
Oh, yes. That was a really lovely one. Deb does those beautiful botanic designs and prints them onto fabrics.
Yeah.
Just beautiful botanic drawings. Mm. And so in... what year was it? 2021, maybe, I think. She did a project and wanted a coat made. She was making a film called The Sartorial Naturalist, and she wanted to star in this film wearing this beautiful outfit. So we looked at fabrics in her studio, and she was doing new ones, but we were going to have to wait and was cutting it really fine to wait for the new ones. So she had this lovely blue-grey, I can't remember what the name of the plant was, but it was a beautiful fabric. So we decided to go ahead and do the jacket in that fabric and also use some of her silks that she'd been doing in her scarves. So,
what was the style that you
cut it was that? An interesting style. It was a genuine Victorian pattern that I had that I altered to fit her. So I quite like, among all my collections, I went through a period of collecting authentic patterns from the 1800s and made various dresses. Oh,
and the books that you have up there. So there is like these incredible collection of like different like corsets and bodices and like all of these amazing books on all of these different, but like people don't know that stuff anymore.
Not at all.
Like it's like just such a it's important that we still know how to make all these things and what they were made out of. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
So that coach that coat featured handmade buttons too, because her beautiful printed fabrics had these little circles of designs on them along the side of the scarves, and I just looked at them and thought, buttons.
Yeah.
So I cut out all those circles and did little self-covered buttons that went all over the trousers, which I'm wearing a test pattern of. So it had all buttons, hand-covered buttons down.
That's a 1920s pattern you were saying.
So the pant, we could have done a skirt with the outfit, but Deb is not a skirt person really. So we did this lovely pair of jodhpur pants with this Victorian coat. So it was a little bit steampunky.
Oh, yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
And I love doing shows
where you can mix themes and take and Emma, my brief with doing the Emma show at the moment, was overtones of Bridgerton. So I'm looking at putting the men in skinny leg moleskin pants because the period pants at the time are really hard to wear and hard to make, and you get the same effect with skinny leg jeans. So why not?
That sounds hot. That is going to be a good show.
I'm just thinking with the idea too, they'll have their lovely dresses, but why not wear a pair of Fluvogs?
Oh, hello. Yes. Shoe of choice.
Yeah.
if you have the chance to see The Importance of Being Earnest, put on by the National Theatre Company in London, they have their simultaneous broadcasts and you can pick it up on film or television.
So
I went to see The Importance of Being Earnest, and it was really funny because these outfits were just amazing. They were cherry-picked from various periods, then done in amazing fabrics.
Yeah.
So the lead guy had, in the first act, this amazing suit out of this amazing brocade, and it was a bit like Deb's coat with this swing-out peplum from the waist. And it was beautiful. It was, you know, not period appropriate at all. And then there was another guy who had a much more period appropriate thing, and then another woman who had a different period in her beautiful dress. But they all looked amazing and they told a story.
Yes.
And so I'm really getting into theatre now, not having to be totally historically accurate, but more tell a story.
Yeah.
There was the importance of being earnest with these amazing things. And in the finale, they all came out in things that I could have clothed from the Rosny production of Priscilla.
Wow.
They were all totally over the top in these crazy variations of what they'd worn in the show, either by colour or they had the hoop petticoat but not the dress over the top of it, and all these things. And it was like, wow, that is so exciting. So I'm hoping that some theatre makers will be brave enough to do some really interesting things like that. I had the chance to see the story, what was it called? The story of Dorian Gray.
Yes, that was fantastic.
And like the costuming was just stunning.
So dandy.
Yes, I really like that dandy period. Yeah.
Well, actually, let's go there. You're a dandy, honestly. And I say that with all love and respect because you have such a beautiful flavour when you go out to see a show, just even in your everyday, you really pull together and curate a beautiful outfit. And I've always been inspired by what you wear, and, you know, you'll wear the hat with the pins. You've got a beautiful selection of beautiful brooches and pins, and then you've got the scarves and the silks and the fleuvogs, and then my favourite is that tapestry skirt. So I guess my question is, you're seeing this on the theatre, on the stage now, like, and you bring the theatre and the costuming out, but you make it available for every day. So what's the thinking behind this?
That's an interesting story, and it goes down to a book I bought, and I have a few books on the shelf. The costume designer behind Mad Men, Janine Bryant, put out this book, and it was all about, you know, finding your style and wearing your vintage and just, you know, just do it. You know, I hear all these people say, oh, I never wear hats because there's no opportunity. And I think, well, what the hell? Just make your opportunity. Find where you want to wear your outfit and wear it. And I find, you know, even working with students, I go out usually, unless I'm really snowed under with a show, and I'll just wear jeans and the show shirt. But I go out of my way to put together, to curate an outfit that'll inspire them. And I'll say, oh, look at that. Where did you get those shoes? Or I love that shirt. Or where did you get that skirt? And when I can say, I made it myself, or I remade it, or I did this, that and the other, that makes my heart sing.
Yeah.
I really enjoy doing that. And as you've seen downstairs, my cubes with all my handbags and hats and gloves.
Beautiful.
Well, you know, when I finish breakfast, it's not what everyone does, but I finish my breakfast and I look on the shelf and think, oh, I'm going to wear those gloves today.
I'm going to be blue today.
Yeah. And they're there in front of me so I can see them. I don't forget I've got them away in a cupboard and I curate the look. And Janine Bryant talked about that in this book, and I thought, yeah, that really speaks to me. So, yeah.
That's amazing.
Beautiful advice as well.
It's such great advice. So basically everybody needs to have their wardrobe really in front of them, and so.
Oh, the kitchen. Sorry, Pete.
Yeah,
the racks are coming up.
The racks are coming upstairs. Thank you for that permission, Nicole and Nadia. That's it. Yeah. But it is. It's wonderful.
And, yeah, I think you had, was it Susie who talked about wardrobe planning?
Yes.
And the colours and, you know, you don't have to wear what's in fashion. I worked in fashion for a little while. I thought, this is not me. I don't need to do this. And so sustainable fashion is a much more important thing for me.
Yeah.
You know, reusing things, recycling things, making things. I met up with a woman a few years ago. I was introduced to a lady called Jane Milbourne, and she wrote a book called Slow Clothing, and she's all about reusing textiles. She's even got a 10-point clothing manifesto, and, you know, wear clothes with personal meaning. And I think wearing clothes with personal meaning to you, making clothes with personal meaning, recycling, upcycling, doing things with personal meaning is so it makes you feel good.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and doing it yourself, making it yourself so you can say, because the students who say to me, I've made it myself, are so happy that they've done that.
I think too, I'm trying to think of what they were called, but people don't really have them now. But I know that my mum had, it's like a dowry box. It was like a chest with special fabrics that was handed down.
Yep.
So I know that I've got some bits of fabric that have significance that are, you know, a couple of generations old, and old bridesmaid dresses, and sort of, you know, not as full on as Laura with the collections, but definitely I have fabrics. I have no idea what I'm ever going to do with them, but they're significant and I hold on to them. So
Oh, that history in things is underrated, I think.
Yeah.
There's so many things with so much importance. I started a few years ago when my first grandson was born making story quilts, and there's variations of story quilts, and mine tend to be on the new side, but there's also story quilts that incorporate like your wedding dress or your great granny's wedding dress, and just using things to tell a story. You know, it's like those teddy bears out of grandpa's shirt. Yeah. I think that's just such a lovely idea, and it's one of the many things I've thought about doing.
Oh, yes.
And I'll have a Pinterest board for it.
Oh, great. Yeah. Please share it. Oh,
yeah.
You're going to have more time to do all these amazing things.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And those story quilts are so beautiful, and you've had such great feedback from mums who their child has just really engaged with the texture and the fabric.
Oh, yes, because I've done a couple. The first one was the Very Hungry Caterpillar for my grandson. The second one was Miffy Meets Mondrian for my Dutch friend, and they had lots of photos going to the Dick Bruner Museum, and
really?
The Miffy at the Dick Bruner, and Mondrian paintings. So that was a really nice one. And then the last one I did, the little boy's just gone, turned one, probably 15 months, and that was for the fabric, costume designer Angie White, who went to Rosny many years ago before I taught there, but got in touch with me and has given me things ever since, in the way of beautiful fabrics left over from her various projects, including some scraps from the dress she made for Jess Melboy to appear in Eurosinger.
Eurovision.
Amazing. Singing in Eurovision. Wow. Seen by 80 million people. Yeah. And I've got some of that fabric in the Priscilla quilt.
Oh,
yeah, so my Priscilla memory quilt is a good example of using those textiles in a way that preserves them and keeps the memories alive.
Yes.
The one I did for Angie in Sydney for her little boy Romeo was the fish story. What is it?
The rainbow fish.
Yes. So my rainbow fish quilt used a lot of her fabrics in this beautiful rainbow fish. Yeah.
Yes.
So that was the most recent one.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that use of textiles. It's a memory. That's beautiful.
And feeling those textiles. Yeah. I know Jane Longhurst was really interested in it and did a bit of an interview with me.
She did. We're going to put all of these links and connections into the show notes so everyone can find out more about you. But I also want to know – did you have anything? Sorry, I keep interrupting.
No.
Where to now?
Yes, that was my question.
Oh, okay. Do you want to ask
No. Because I'm just saying busy hands.
Busy hands, yeah.
Yeah.
So at the moment I've been doing it for a couple of years, I have a series of hat boxes that Annette Downs rang me and said, these are for sale at the Mornington Tip Shop. You need them, Nicole. And I thought, I do. They're gorgeous.
Yeah.
And I happened to be sick at the time, so my friend William Dowd went and picked them up for me. And I filled them up by colour, because I like to arrange by colour. Mm. And so I've got a colour collection of little trims, bits of leather, bits of fabric and bag handles. So I've been wanting to do this range of bags for quite a while, but haven't had time to sit down and do it. So bags are going to be a big thing when I finish work and don't have any other shows and other things to do. They'll be patchwork bags with personal meaning that collect up. They might have a few buttons on them and other personal treasures that I've collected over the years. They might even have a hat to go with them or some decorated gloves.
That sounds beautiful. Yeah. I will have to stay tuned for that.
Yeah.
And you're going to go overseas again soon?
Look, we were thinking of going over for my husband's 70th birthday, but then we thought about moving to Melbourne and then we thought, oh, that could be a bit expensive if we want to keep travelling. So we're going to stay here in Hobart for some time longer, but yeah, we'll do some more travelling. We both really love going to Japan and there's a particular street there called Nippori Fabric Town that I like visiting.
Oh, of course. That sounds right up your alley.
It's a fabric town.
Yeah, in a street. Yeah. With buttons and all sorts of things. So, yeah.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I go over to Melbourne a bit and collect buttons and fabric over there too. And a member of the Button Collectors – or not a member, but I follow their website, the Button Collectors Club.
Oh, how fabulous.
Yeah, so I've got my collections and I think the buttons need to be used. They need to get out onto bags and other things. So, and hats. I've got a lot of vintage hats I want to upcycle. So I'm thinking I'll make the bags to go with the hats and have little sets. And the other thing I've really enjoyed doing over the last few years is taking vintage clothing and recreating them, upcycling them to make them wearable again, whether it's for a wedding or a woman brought me a skirt a few years ago that her grandmother had worn, beautiful black paper watermarked moire taffeta skirt, and the thread in the seams was just disintegrating. The tiny, tiny waist just didn't fit her. So I remade it for her into a wearable skirt today. Beautiful full circle, a little bit shorter because the hem had dropped, redid all the seams that were falling apart and put a new waistband on. So it fitted her.
Grandmother's dress.
Yeah.
That's so special.
Yeah, so I'd really like to do more of that because it's the personal meaning, the special memories embedded in.
Well, I have my wedding dress all like, you know, sealed in a box for someone one day. I'm not wearing it again. Hopefully a child or a granddaughter or somebody will want it.
My daughter didn't show any interest in mine, so I started putting it in shows.
Oh, how fabulous.
So it's been in Wedding Singer, a few versions of Wedding Singer
was
around
it really?
Hobart. Yeah. Yeah, because Wedding Singer is very heavily 80s. Yeah.
So perfect.
Yeah, so
How fabulous.
Yeah, so good.
This year I got back to making a wedding dress, the first time in a long time I've done a wedding dress. And the wedding dress was for a gorgeous student I had back in 2008, and she said to me at the time that she thought I was such an inspirational teacher that she'd like me to make her wedding dress when she got round to get married. And so years later, we've stayed in touch over the years, but years later she said, I'm getting married, Nicole. Will you make the dress? And I said, of course.
She stuck to her word.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So I made Carrie's dress. She contacted me a few weeks ago saying a magazine wanted to do a special on her wedding.
What?
Ivory Tusk. Wow. Have you heard of that?
Oh, yes.
So Ivory Tusk doing a bit of a feature on everything at her wedding. And she said, oh, do you want your name mentioned, Nicole? And I said, I don't know that I need any business at the moment, because at that stage we were looking like we were going to move to upheaven, move to Melbourne. And I thought, oh, God, I can't push that one too far. But,
Nicole, you just put people on a waiting list.
Well,
you just
true.
Have that email. Oh, honestly.
Yeah.
Oh, God. It's going to be on there, isn't it? It's going to be on there.
I think I'll be mentioned, but,
Okay. So. All right.
Amazing.
Yeah. Because that dress was rather beautiful. It was, the just really simple dress.
So lovely.
But the bodice she wore at the reception was the bit I really liked doing. That was the organza, backless, big tie bow at the back, and then these big, huge sleeves, very 70s sleeves, some bishop sleeves.
Oh, beautiful.
With beautiful covered buttons up the wrist and
stunning
collar. Mm. Yeah, she looked gorgeous in it.
She did, and even the toile that you pulled together with a black organza, that is just
So that was the prototype.
That was the prototype. Stunning.
I can see why. Yeah. A magazine would want to take photos of it. It's like incredible.
The whole wedding was really lovely. Yeah.
So elegant, and from the pictures that I've seen, and you really had to, like, it looked like just a simple design of a dress, but honestly, you know, it's on the bias. It's on with some very fancy fabric. So, that's a bit of work there.
Yes.
And did she come to you with the fabric? Or did you tell her?
I went up to Melbourne to see my family, and she'd booked in a booking at a bridal place to try some things on and show me what she liked. And then we went fabric shopping.
Oh, how fabulous.
And we went to a couple of shops in town, and then we went out to Kew near where my sister lives, where I was staying. And a lovely shop called Silk World had these beautiful fabrics, and we just bought it on the spot.
Oh, wow.
But you knew what would work, so.
See, this woman, everyone, listeners, creative rumblers, I want you to meet again, Nicole Ottray. She's a genius. She's an innovator. Definitely so generous, so passionate. What was it, fierce?
It was fabric, form and fierceness.
Fabric, form and fierceness is Nicole Ottray. And, like, the amount of experience that you have, and just the always open to learning and really exploring, it's so admirable.
Thank you.
So admirable. And we're really so happy to have had you on our show and to be in your home.
And so the next shows that are coming up, so for any of our listeners that are in Hobart, the Newsies.
The Newsies.
Oh, the Newsies, yes. The Newsies is on at Rosny College.
Okay. Then Emma.
Oh, Emma. So in late July, Emma will be on at the Playhouse. Mm-hmm. And
is that directed by?
Directed by Karen Kluss.
Not the Karen Kluss.
The Karen Kluss.
Oh, hello, Karen.
Hi, Karen.
That's got a stellar cast. She'll be announcing. I think she's putting that announcement out over this weekend. There's some really good people in the role. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to that one.
I'm really excited to see the costuming.
Yeah.
And everything else. But honestly, while I'm in the room with you, Nicole, it's the costumes.
And the one we haven't talked about is my other latest project with the Aboriginal artist, Risa. And I've got some beautiful, two of her paintings have been translated into fabrics. And so I'll be making a coat for her and a three-piece suit for her son. So that's I really like those artist collaborations. So it gives you something really different to work with in terms of the fabric, a bit like the Deb Waste project.
But that still, that personal meaning that people are getting from the textiles, and then you're helping create it into something else.
Put it into something they can wear.
How amazing. I can see how exciting that is.
I think my love has always been to take a two-dimensional fabric and make it into a three-dimensional form. Yeah.
Are you working on anything on your own body personally at the moment? Or planning to?
I have a couple of things tucked away. I bought a roll of very lovely Japanese fabric that I want to make a blouse out of. I've got a few pieces in my box to go immediately. But I've got a whole rack of fabrics I've been buying over the years and I just haven't had time to stop and make. So, yeah, I'd love to make some more for myself. I actually made a few things last year, the blouse I'm wearing.
Yeah. And I really like that.
I love that too.
Really
purple
nice.
A purple blouse and that I made to go with a skirt that's got these lovely checked bits and some purple silk from a bridesmaid's dress I made many years ago. So I've been doing just a little bit more sewing for myself and would like to do more of that.
You have more time.
Yeah. And I've got enough fabric till I die, so I don't need to buy much more fabric. But
you can never not have enough fabric. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. If anybody out there has any amazing fabric, Nicole would like it. Yep.
And then Nicole always shares things with me too, so I'm in on it too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, there was just that little bit of fabric for your workshop, wasn't there, a couple of years ago?
You gave me a little bit. Honestly, I had two huge
I think we took a trolley out to the car.
Two trolleys worth of stuff for this workshop, which, yeah, it was great. And great. And you always give me some nice fancy things.
I think because people give me so much stuff, I just, find giving it to the right people. It's like, you know, honing in on what their interest is, and would you like some of this to do that project?
Yeah.
You know, I think I really like finding those connections and putting people in touch with each other, and I think I've done a good job of that too.
You've created a nice community around you.
Yeah.
A community of kindred spirits and yeah.
Well, thank you for being on the Creative Rumble.
Thank you, Nicole.
Thank you for having me, because I think listening to the Creative Rumble, I don't think I've missed an episode yet, has been really special, because it just, it shows me that anyone can be creative and you just have to give it a go. Yeah.
Aww,
do it.
Thank you.
Thanks, Nicole. Thank you. Hey, listeners, we hope you're enjoying the Creative Rumble podcast.
If you're loving the content, why not share the podcast with someone who could use some creative inspiration?
We'd also love to hear from you. Drop us a note via our website or Instagram. Your feedback and stories make this podcast even better.
And if you want to support us further, get online to our website and click on the Buy Us a Coffee link. Your donation keeps the Creative Rumble alive.
You can find all the links in the show notes. Thank you for being a part of our creative community.
Until next time, keep rumbling.